a whirlwind trip to Europe in 16 days through 8 countries, France, Switzerland, Monaco, Italy, Austria, Germany, Holland, and England. One day my sister Helen called me and said her oldest son Ralph and his wife Millie were thinking about taking a trip to Europe and wanted to know if we would like to go with them. It didn't take us long to decide to go. Their son Bob is in the service over in Germany and he could meet us in Paris. We all had to get our passports and decide what to take along. The travel agent said only one suitcase and one travel bag that you take on the plane, so we traveled light. On July 10th, 76, we all met in New York. The airport was crowded, so it took a long time to get checked in for our flight to Paris. There were 52 in our group. There were many other groups too, so it seemed like wall-to-wall people. We went on Overseas National Airways Flight 710. After getting squared away with our boarding passes, we wandered around the airport and saw some of the sights of New York. Just before dark, our speedy jet took off across the Atlantic Ocean on the way to Paris, France. After they served dinner, everyone settled down to rest. The time seemed to go fast, and soon it was time for breakfast. They say the country of France is like a star, as it seems to stretch out to all the other countries. Six hours after we left New York, our tour director greeted us in the Paris airport. It seemed like a long time getting the group and the luggage on the bus and over to the hotel. We had a new air-conditioned bus with big scenic windows that we would be traveling in for 16 days with a wonderful German driver and a tour director from Amsterdam. After we got everyone checked in our hotel, they gave us the rest of the day to do what we would like to do, as it would be about the middle of the night back home. Bob was there to meet us when we got to the hotel, so we decided not to lose any time and start right in exploring Paris. Somehow everyone falls in love with Paris. There is some kind of magic in the air. The cathedrals and palaces seem alive with the glorious past. Even the pavement stones are rounded out in some fantastic design. As you walk along the narrow streets, you see the French people sitting out in the open air cafes, sipping wine and chatting with friends. You see open bookstores with art collections along the banks of the Seine River and small streets as well. We decide to take the metro, the Paris subway, downtown and visit the Louvre and Tuileries. The Louvre is one of the largest museums in the world. Originally, it was the royal palace for French kings. Each king built on more rooms and has more than 2 miles of galleries. The Mona Lisa and the Lord's Supper are the most famous paintings in the world, and the two most famous marble statues are Venus, who has lost her arms, and Victory, an angel, who has lost her head. These are beautiful, but there are many, many more works of art here. It was Napoleon that established this museum. It seemed like we walked all over Paris that Sunday, but there was much more. On Monday morning, we went on a motor tour around Paris. We started out at the most famous Arch of Triumph. Napoleon had it constructed so that the sun shines directly over the middle of the arch on his birthday. The arch is set in a circle, and from the top of the arch, a view of the 12 streets radiate from the circle. It is carved with Napoleon's many victories. The unknown French soldier's tomb is buried under the pavement here. The most beautiful avenue in Paris, Champs-Élysées, pronounced Champs-Élysées, which means the fields of paradise. The guide said there are over 100,000 trees planted along the boulevards and streets of Paris. In the center of Place de Concorde is a monument of one single tall stone and is called Cleopatra's Needle, which is over 3,000 years old. Madame Pompadour and Madame Dubarry had palaces around here. There is a Roman temple called Madeleine, built in honor of Mary Magdalene. Across the River Seine is the Eiffel Tower, which was the tallest structure on Earth, 985 feet at the time of its construction in 1887. It was a steel structure built for their 1889 World's Fair. We passed the famous jail Conciergerie, where Marie Antoinette was confined. We passed the Opera House, too, with its rich decorations, white marble staircases, and crystal chandeliers. There is an island in the Seine River called Isle de la Cité, where the Cathedral of Notre Dame was built about 800 years ago in honor of the Virgin Mary. Notre Dame in French means Our Lady. It is built of stone and beautiful stained glass windows. The cathedral has two towers in front and a thin spire in the center. Around the edge of the roof there are strange animals made of stone, hideous creatures different from real animals, part bird and part devil. They are called gargoyles, made as ugly as possible because in the days of long ago, it was thought they would scare away evil spirits from the church. We walked all through it and it was a magnificent sight. We wanted to take the tour to Versailles and see Louis XIV's palace and grounds, but we found out there were no tours on Sunday. So in the afternoon, we went to Malmaison near Paris to see Josephine and Napoleon's castle and ground. Its royal beauty was fantastic. In the evening, we took the subway over to the Eiffel Tower. What a beautiful sight it was to stand at the top just before dusk and watch all the lights begin to sparkle far below, and to know you have been in Paris, the most beloved and most celebrated city in the world. Tuesday morning, we had to say goodbye to Bob as he had to get back to his base in Germany. We left very early that morning as we had a long drive along the serene landscape of France and the vine-clad hills of Burgundy, where many kinds of wine are made. The city of Lyons on the Rhone River is a center of the textile industry. They grow mulberry trees on which silkworms feed, and the silk is woven into thread. Near the city of Grasse in southern France, acres and acres of flowers are raised for perfume. We soon pass Dijon and enter Switzerland. Driving over the Jura Mountains, we come to Lucerne, the Swissiest of all Swiss towns and the main tourist center of the Alps. After checking in our hotel, we all went shopping for souvenirs. The symbol of Lucerne is a swan, and you see many beautiful ones in the lakes. Fascinating flowers, boats, and snow-clad mountains, too. It's the gateway to the Alps. We walk over the Chapel Bridge, one of the six crossing the river. This is a famous wooden covered bridge, and if you look up, you see beautiful paintings along the roof. There is a hexagon water tower next to the bridge that was used as a torture chamber in medieval days. And this was where William Tell shot the apple off of his son's head for refusing to bow to a hat that his cruel overlord had put on a pole. We had a leisure evening cruise on the lake. We could see thousands of sparkling lights along the shore. Cheese fondue and wine were served on board, while alpine hornblowers, yodelers, and country girls in local costumes entertained us. Later we danced and promenaded on deck in the fresh breeze and had an enjoyable time. The next day we went to see the Dying Lion Monument that is carved in solid rock by a famous sculptor, Thorvaldsen. He carved it in honor of the Swiss guards who died in France rather than surrender. After that, we took off for the Alpine heart of Switzerland. When we reached Bern, the capital of Switzerland, the bears were performing and entertaining the onlookers. The bears are the official mascot of Bern. We followed the beautiful highway past Lausanne, high above the Lake of Geneva, and arrive in Geneva itself. Geneva is the headquarters of many international organizations such as the Red Cross and labor organizations that have conference here. On Thursday, we crossed the Swiss border into Austria. The savory Alps rise into view as we reach Grenoble, city of the Olympic Games. Lavender fields pass by as we motor through the perfume country to Nice with its famous promenade along the Bay of Angels, faced by the elegant hotels, theaters, and a casino. Nice is the queen of the French Riviera, and they say it is getting more popular than Monte Carlo. As we leave Nice and motor into Monaco, there are many luxurious yachts of the international set in the harbor. 24-hour guard is maintained at the entrance of the palace, and a formal changing of the guard takes place at noon each day. Monaco is the second smallest country. We saw the lovely parks and beautiful gardens, but we missed Princess Grace and her family as they were in the USA celebrating the bicentennial. From Nice to the Italian border are three beautiful roads that parallel the coastline called the Three Cornices. The Grand Corniche was built by Napoleon and skims across near the crest of the mountains. The middle road is cut in the side of the mountains about halfway down. Both of them overlook Monaco, but only the lower shore road actually goes through Monaco, and if the gay lights were out, you might not know you went through it at all. We took the second road and were soon on our way into Italy. Italy played such an important part in the ancient history of the world that people from all over want to visit it and see the places they have read about. It reminds you of the old woman in the shoe, or at least a boot, and in it lived more men, women, and children than the country seemed able to support. So many went to the United States and other places. Genoa and Venice are located at the top of the boot. Genoa at the extreme left and Venice at the right. We stopped at Genoa, the busy harbor that once Columbus knew. As we toured the city, we saw a beautiful sight, the Plaza della Vittoria and gardens with Columbus's three ships landscaped in flowers. From here, we boarded an express train for a daytime ride following beaches and lovely bays of the Mediterranean Sea through the Etruscan region to Rome, the Eternal City. It was a long, slow ride, and we didn't get to Rome until 10 o'clock. We had a fabulous dinner waiting for us in an Italian restaurant. We were all very tired, but the wine and musical entertainment revived us, and everyone had a good time. Needless to say, we got to our hotel very late. Our tour started out early the next morning to see some of the marvels of the ages. Rome's Colosseum was built in AD 80 to hold 50,000 people. The floor of the giant arena is now gone, exposing the underground passages. For many centuries, the Colosseum was used as a quarry, a convenient source of building stone for local people. But despite the destruction, the Colosseum remains an outstanding landmark. The Forum was the heart of Rome and was the site of several temples, as well as the marketplace where farmers brought their produce to sell, and all of the law courts were here too. With the decline of the Imperial Rome, it fell into disuse and, like the Colosseum, became a source of building stone. We saw a pyramid that is one of the most remarkable and best preserved monuments built during the first imperial period, 12 BC. It is the only pyramid in the European countries. It is 121 feet high and has a base of 100 feet. Our group gathered in front of the beautiful Arch of Constantine and had our picture taken in a group form, which we prize very much. The Pantheon, standing there over 2,000 years, is considered one of the most important monuments of ancient Rome. It was erected in 27 BC and was dedicated to the seven planetary gods. Pantheon means most holy place. It was damaged several times, but always restored. The interior is majestic in its matchless grandeur and harmony. Our guide takes us to Vatican City, which is the smallest country in the world. A short visit through St. Peter's Basilica makes you feel like you are in a magic world of beauty. The Papal Altar is situated under the cupola, which is magnificent. Leaning against the last pier on the right is the famous bronze statue of St. Peter. As we move along, we saw Michelangelo's famous sculpture, the Pietà. The one of Moses, too, was most impressive, and we saw the shrine for the chains of St. Peter that were found in Jerusalem, and much more. We went to the Sistine Chapel, which is a long hall. It takes a very long time to grasp all the things that you see there. We went through the catacombs and saw all the weird places that they bury their dead. Late in the afternoon, we drive along the rolling countryside to Tivoli for a full course dinner with strolling musicians that put you in a merry mood, and after lots of food and wine and songs, we go to visit the beautiful illuminated gardens and fountains of Villa D'Estes. There are over 500 fountains here that all run by gravity. No machinery, really fantastic. A sight you cannot forget. Este was one of the most prominent families in Italy. The villa was formerly a convent and was continually being rebuilt until it was one of the most beautiful in the world. On our way back to the hotel, we stopped to see the most famous Trevi Fountain, where we made a wish and threw our coins in the fountain. It is such a famous place. It is always crowded day and night. This ornate fountain was completed in 1762 and pours forth 17 million gallons of water a day, filling the square with its cheerful noise and cooling air. Remember the movie Three Coins in the Fountain? On Sunday we drive on the Valley of the Sun and cross the Tiber River 7 times, passing historic sites through Tuscan landscapes. We arrive in Florence, Italy, which is the center of arts and craft. The Chianti wine is made here that we enjoy so much. In the center of the city stands the domed cathedral that was built in 1296. Closer to the Arno River on a large square is Palazzo Vecchio, a rectangular fortress palace with a tall tower built in the 14th century with its open-air galleries of statues. Another palace has a collection of Renaissance paintings. Ponte Vecchio is the oldest bridge, and the shops are built right on the bridge itself. During the Renaissance period, Florence was the richest Italian city and supported the leading artists of the time. Churches and palaces contained many large collections of masterpieces by famous artists such as Michelangelo. Monday morning, we motor along the countryside past the famous city of Bologna, where the world's oldest university was founded. Bologna is known for their perfection of Italian food. Next, we stopped at Padua for a visit to the Basilica of St. Anthony that was built in 1230. Donatello's equestrian statue of Guatemala to the 15th century leader of the Venetian mercenary army stands in the square in front of the basilica. We continue on to Venice, City of the Sea. Venice is built on scores of tiny pieces of land, 117 islets in all, that have been built up above the shallow waters of the coastal region, underpinned by pilings. The churches, palaces, and residential sections of the city were constructed through the centuries until the present outline was formed and has remained for over three centuries. The main street is the Grand Canal, which is more than 220 feet wide and is where the richest Venetian families built their townhouses. Our local guide takes us on a walking tour around St. Mark's Square, past its colonnades and through the cathedral, and ending up with an exhibition of the Venetian art of glass blowing. We experienced the excitement of a gondola ride. It was a slow ride in a comfortable gondola through centuries-old canals, past ancient marble palaces, hidden piazzas, and underneath arched bridges, while serenaders with their limitless repertoire of Italian songs put us in a romantic mood. It was heavenly. Later, we find ourselves driving on the plains of northern Italy and then through narrow mountain valleys faced with chalets looking up at the reddish jagged peaks of the Dolomites, a mountain chain separating Italy from Germany. We pass world-famous skiing and sports resorts. Cable cars soar upward to giant heights. We continue through more beautiful mountain scenes over the Brenner Pass into Austria, the country that is shaped like a pear. We cross the Europa-Brook viaduct to Innsbruck, which is surrounded by the Alps. Innsbruck became an important and favorite place of the Habsburg emperors in the Middle Ages, so they made it the capital of the surrounding territory. In 1500, Maximilian I made his imperial residence here. He made a golden roof over a balcony with about 3,000 gold-plated tiles glistening on it. The balcony served as a box where royalty could watch entertainment in the square below. On Wednesday morning, we leave the Austrian Tyrol and enter the Bavarian Alps of Germany. We pass Garmisch, the most famous of alpine resort places, and soon stop to visit Oberammergau.